Hello, everybody. It's another Tuesday, and I want to welcome all of our listeners, and especially some of the new ones that I know are out there today. And I know you're there because we have a really, really exciting guest today, especially for those who are really interested in the entomology of their Jewish surnames. So we're on our genealogy day, and we alternate every week. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about first, before we introduce Alexander, is really what genealogy is all about. And most of us know that, having done our own work, that genealogy really is a series of clues. And as we attack each clue, we sometimes get another clue. And our job, I think, as genealogists, is to really proceed through each and every clue that we get. I was listening last night to a tape of one of my mentors, Colette Baron-Reed, and she was talking about cledons. And cledons is when we receive a message that really wasn't intended for us, but we just happened to get it. And it comes from very ancient times, during Roman and Greek times, when, you know, the oracles would go up to the top of the mountains, and they would ask a question, and then they would walk the streets and listen to, and eavesdrop, actually, to what was being said. And in most cases, they would get some incredible answers. And in fact, what we do as genealogists is we're really going back and eavesdropping on some of our ancestors in all practical purposes. But I bring this up because just Saturday, for many of you who know, my research started 28 years ago, almost to the day, down in Galveston when I found a tombstone of my family. And there were many, many people buried in this plot, actually. And I turned around and asked my father, I said, who are these people? And my father said, I don't know. And that bothered me. But what is really very interesting in talking about clues is that I was doing some research Saturday for a client, actually, in Galveston, and I happened on the Galveston Daily News, which is now on Ancestry.com, and lo and behold, I got sidetracked, as we all do, and I actually did a search on my family surname, and 28 years later, I actually found a long article on what happened and how this particular family member died at the age of 15, which was really what got me started in this genealogy quest 28 years ago. So clues are clues. And I bring it up because probably one of the sources of clues that are provided today are through a series of books by our guest, Alexander Bider. And as many of us know who are doing Jewish research, there is so little available, both online, but that's changing pretty much on a daily basis and has been for many years. But some of the only clues that we have could come from really sources that he's put together over these many years. You know, Sasha, as I'm going to call him, and as I think he would prefer everybody call him, actually studied physics and mathematics and has his PhD in applied mathematics. And when he was working on his postgraduate work, he became very, very interested in the entomology and the geographic distribution of Jewish surnames. And as a result, and we're going to find out how in the world this really happened, he has written a number of books, and these books I don't think are really books. I think for those of us who are doing Jewish research, they're really more in tune with what I call a Bible, because without these books, we sometimes may not get the clues that we need to really do our research and continue our research. So for many of you, these books include the Dictionary of Jewish Surnames from the Russian Empire, the Jewish Surnames in Prague, Dictionary of Jewish Surnames from the Kingdom of Poland, a Dictionary of Jewish Surnames from Galicia, a Dictionary of the Ashkenazi Given Names and Handbook of Ashkenazi Given Names and Their Variants. So Sasha now lives in Paris. He did complete his studies in Jewish studies at the Sorbonne, and I'd like to welcome him to the show. Sasha, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, looking at your background, and I'm sure everybody would like to have the opportunity to ask you a few questions before we really get into what we're doing. As a mathematician and a physicist, what was it that really turned your attention to the work that you have just done some incredible, astonishing work in, and that is what has been published in all these books?
So, just first thing, my name is Bader. It's not Bader, but Bader.
Okay,
not a German name. It's the Yiddish name from southern Ukraine, so its pronunciation is Bader. Now, it's true that, I was interested, working on my thesis on mathematics, I had really free time for going to different libraries and to study everything I wanted. So I had, and I used this time to just to explore some domains that were of great interest for me. And finally, I found the domain I think that is the domain of my most important scholarly interest, the domain of etymology of Jewish names, generally speaking, first name or last name. Well, it's not really related to my background, to my background of PhD of mathematics, but I think this background was extremely important for my work because it allowed me to have some scholarly, some scientific point of view on any question in humanities. And so when I started to study this, I was already, it's not bad to be trained in mathematics to do, I think, any intellectual work. So, of course, for me, this background is extremely important in the development of the how I approach different problems related to Jewish languages, Jewish history, and specifically, of course, names.
Absolutely, and I just have the utmost admiration for you and the work that you've done, and the fact that I know as a non-mathematician and scientist, I have probably not an ounce of that in my bones, so to speak. The work that you've done has just totally been an incredible source of information for those of us doing Jewish research. The first book that you published was The Dictionary of Jewish Surnames from the Russian Empire. And just out of curiosity, how long did it take for you to produce something like that? I mean, that's a heck of a lot of research to come up with pages and pages and pages of names and places.
Well, actually, I came to it in several stages. First of all, I started, it was just a pure hobby, as I had many other hobbies before. I just was curious about what could be the origin of the most common Jewish names from Russia. I knew well enough the geography of Ukraine, of Belarus, because when I was a schoolboy, I already studied the etymology of place names, in especially in the on the territory of former Soviet Union. So I was knowledgeable enough about the geography of this area, and I, when just looking into the map of Ukraine and Belarus, Lithuania, I was just adding some suffixes, and I was seeing that for every one of them there is a Jewish surname of some person whom I knew either personally or just have seen the name down. in the Russian different Soviet sources. During the first year, I would say, it was a pure amusement just for me to kind of cross world, kind of just intellectual challenge to try to find the etymology of the most common names. And at the time, I was living in Moscow, of course, and I was thinking that at any case on this topic, there is necessarily a book or several or many books even published in Israel or in the United States of scholarly value. And for this reason, it was for me just my personal amusing pastime. But then I think two years were spent, and I get acquainted with some Soviet Jewish philologists who were interested in this topic, and they told me that actually nothing is really done in this domain scholarly, and that except for the book by Benstone Kaganov, I don't know how do you pronounce it in the United States. What is the pronunciation for you of the name?
You're asking the wrong person, but I think it's Kaganov.
Kaganov, okay. So, except for this extremely popular and book which vulgarize many etymology and give many, many names in a not appropriate way, actually nothing was done. And so since then, I realized that perhaps my purely personal interest in my studies that were done just for my own pleasure could be of some interest for other people. And so when I emigrated to France in 1990, I wrote several. The book was already almost finished, and the dictionary was almost done in Russian. And I wrote letters to several linguists who I knew wrote some papers about Jewish names. And all of them answered me that it is, in any case, necessary to translate this from Russian to English, of course. And perhaps someone would be interested in publishing the book. And at that moment, I came just across a few people in Paris who were members of genealogical circle of Paris, of Jewish genealogy. And one of them told me that, Sasha, do you know Avotainu and Corporation? They just started to publish books on Jewish genealogy, so why not to write to suggest the book to Gary Mokotov, to Avotainu, generally speaking. And this was done, and finally I realized that this book can be published, and it will be really of interest for people outside of my friends circle, outside of my family. So this is the way how it came to be a book.
That is really a wonderful story. And from there, you've got, you know, several other books. Just, we're going to take some questions that we've been receiving from many people prior to the show. But before we do that, you know, if you take, you know, the book and you have a name or a place, what kind of information could one expect to see when they look at the book? For example, if I gave you the name, it'd probably be Polish, but, you know, my family name is Krulewicz or Krulewicz or however we want to pronounce it. If I went to look it up in your book, exactly what kind of information would your book guide me to?
So what is the spelling of the name? I was
K-R-U-L-E-W-I-C-H. And I'm just, you don't have to use that as an example of looking it up. What I'm just asking for is, you know, you would have, what, the name of the surname and the name of the town and where it might come from. I'm just trying to get a description of you know, what each listing might include.
And what from what area it was, this name?
It would be from the Suwałk area of Poland.
Okay. So how do you pronounce it? Do you pronounce it Kulevich?
Kulevich, yes. I should have probably given you another one because, you know, like I said, I'm just trying to get a feel for the type of information that might be included on a particular surname in any one of your books.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just threw him a little curve, but.
And go on perhaps with another name from the list that was of messages that were sent for you.
Yes, yes. But before we do that, I wanted let's kind of go into a little bit about your new soundexing system. It's called the Bader-Morse
mm-hmm.
Soundex, correct?
No. We don't call it Soundex in order to not. To have a confusion. Now it's not only Bader, it's Bader-Morse.
Right.
Because
Steve
the
Morse
whole
was
software
yes.
was developed by Steve Morse, and he was the person who initiated the idea to put it in practice. My purely theoretical idea that I exposed in an article to Avotainer. Method is, we call it Bader-Morse phonetic matching, and we don't, in purpose, we don't use the term soundex, because soundex implies some numbering of letters, so some specific and rather simple algorithm, for example, the H. Mokotov soundex or some American soundex. But we don't want to call it soundex. It's a method of phonetic matching of different names that we developed during the last 2 years in order to facilitate searches in the large databases, Jewish or non-Jewish. So we currently we prepared three versions of this algorithm, and all of them already put in on internet. One is for searches to be made for Ashkenazic names, another is for searches to be done for Sephardic names, and the third one, a generic one. So, for example, it would be this one that we recommend to use for non-Jewish searches, for example.
Okay. And what we need to do is I need to find your email where you sent me some of those links, and we need to provide
yes,
those.
Perhaps the best
can
illustration can be done. Yeah.
You want me to do it or you want to do it? The Ashkenazic can be found at http://stevemorse.org phonetics. /Bader, B-E-I-D-E-R, dot P-H-P. Now, you only sent me the two, then that's the Sephardic, which is http://stevemorse.org/phonetics2/FAIG.PHP. So,
so with two links, we prepared ourselves these websites. Well, actually, Steve Morse, of course, prepared these two web pages, and where purpose is to allow to a person who is interested to search through one of reference books on the topic, for example, Ashkenazic names. The reference books are books written by me about Galicia, Kingdom of Poland, Russian Empire, and the book written by Lars Menk about German Jewish surnames. All four books are published by Avotainen Corporation. And so this web page, for example, it includes a list of all names from these books. Of course, people do not see the list itself, but it is behind the screen as for any searchable database. And any person interested to see whether this or that book possess a reference to a name of his or her interest can enter the surname in whatever spelling. For example, the name can be spelled as it is spelled in the United States, so in using English orthography, or in German, or in Polish, or in Russian. Any spelling can be used by the user, and then if this spelling is submitted, the system tries to recognize how with spelling, to what what would be the pronunciation of this spelling, what is the language behind it, and so the system tries to find in the reference books in question what are the names that could be exact with are exactly matching to this name, or perhaps just approximately matching to this name. When we say exact or approximate, the difference is if it is exact, so means it the pronunciation of the name entered by the user and the name which is present in the reference books are exactly the same. And if it is an approximate match, it means that it's not exactly the same, the pronunciation, but perhaps it could be the same name, so the user can just look at it to judge himself or herself. And we also introduced what we called Hebrew match, that means that this name and some name present in the database would have the same Hebrew spelling if we use Hebrew characters. And in order to be able to have some comparison, we also added a column that shows what names would be matching to this same name according to the most popular Soundex index, which that is Deutschmarketer. This is how it works, and any people who are interested to who don't know exactly how that their name can be spelled in the book which is mentioned on this web page, which is called Searching Ashkenazic Reference Names, Books for Jewish Surnames in One Step. So can find what is the exact spelling, what is the spelling that would be pronounced the same way. And once it is with correspondences, with matches are found, well, we don't display the entry from the book.
Right.
It would be the violation of the
copyright.
And so we just say how it's spelled, so the person can just to ask any person who has this book, or just to go to the library, and in any case, it can find what is exactly, what is the information which is present in the book in question for the spelling that was found using this searchable web page.
Well, while you were talking about it, I actually did the spelling on the surname that I had asked you about, and I got two exact. One with the O with the little dash over it. I'm not a linguist. And one without with the U, KRULEWICZ. What is interesting, which I'd never even thought to look at, was the Hebrew came out to Karolowicz, KAROLEWICZ. So that's something I've never looked at before, and maybe have some new clues here. Sasha, why don't we go ahead and start answering some of these questions or providing some clues to some of these individuals that have written us ahead of time. Now, I do want to preface this.
Perhaps just one thing I would like to add is that the web pages concerning searches in reference books for Sephardic or Ashkenazic names, with two pages, we started with them and we prepared them ourselves. But since when several associations or several organizations decided to use the same algorithm in their searchable databases, and for example, Jewish Gen recently, two months ago, they added to their search options. They had already, of course, starting with sounding as, so for Soundex, Deutschmarkeder Soundex, exactly, and they also added if phonetically like. And so with new option of phonetically like in Jewish Gen, and now it's been installed in United States Holocaust Museum, and currently Yad Vashem Department of Names is studying this algorithm in order to decide where we will perhaps we will also in some time add to their current searching options also this phonetically like using the algorithm in question. Okay, so this was just I wanted to add, and of course let's go on with questions concerning different names that you received.
Sure, and you know, this is what you and Steve are doing, not only what you've done in your books, but what you and Steve have done with the Bader-Morse phonetic matching system, you know, is going to be such a wonderful tool for people to research. And you know, I hope those out there that, you know, if you didn't know that that was there on Jewish Gen, that you do now, and that, you know, you begin to look through this throughout the Jewish databases, because this will definitely provide, I'm sure, some really good clues for your ongoing research that perhaps you have not had a chance to have access to before. It's amazing, absolutely amazing. All right, I'm going to start with the ones as they came in order. And, you know, my pronunciation, people, on Russian and Polish names is pretty bad. I think it's because I have a Sephardic background. I live in Texas, and everything comes out sounding like it's Spanish. So in any event, that's I'm going to do my best in any event. That's all I wanted to say. And I also want to preface this, too, that, you know, Sasha has informed me that, you know, there's some that he may not be able to provide as complete or an answer as one would like. But, you know, we're going to do our best and kind of go through these in order as they were received. And if he can't tell you, then I guess we'll tell you we can't tell you, right? In any event, the first one is the name Sklarov, S-K-L-A-R-O-F-F, And the town of origin is Kamenka, near Cherkasy, Ukraine.
Okay. The name in Russian, the pronunciation is Sklarov.
Sklarov, okay.
It's not far from what you tried, I think.
Sklarov.
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 So with the soft L, very soft L to be pronounced. It's Skla, but Skla.
Okay.
Sklarov. Well, Sklarov, it's a Jewish name, but not only Jewish. I don't know, but it's quite possible that the name is specifically Jewish, and I will say why. The root Sklar is Ukrainian. It means glazer. So it's an occupation, someone who is glassmaker. So it's just a normal Ukrainian occupational noun. And for this reason, the name Sklar, just without the ending of Sklar, is a common name, because it was a common occupation for Jews and non-Jews as well. Of course, the name was very common for Ukrainians, for Jews in Ukraine. Now, the ending of is a Russian suffix which means son of. So, name with Ukrainian root and Russian suffix, often with mixture of several languages, this is very often a typically Jewish combination. Because if it would be really an Ukrainian name, the suffix would not be Russian. The suffix would be also Ukrainian. And for Russian names, normally the root is also Russian, but not Ukrainian. So here we have a blended form of Ukrainian and Russian elements. In this area, which is it's south of Kyiv. Now it's not far off. The place was Kamenka, yes?
Yes.
Kamenka was a Jewish shtetl, not specifically Jewish, but many people in this place were Jewish, and many names in this area were based on Yiddish. But as people were also fluent not only in Yiddish, they were also fluent in Slavic languages as well. So many names in this area, not only this one, but others two, were taken from Russian and Ukrainian roots. So for me, it's not a very unusual name, but just a professional name, meaning son of Glazer.
Wonderful. Now, the individual also wrote that of her four grandparents, this was, who all came from the Ukraine, that this was the only one without a Germanic surname. So I don't know if there's any way we can answer that without knowing.
I would say that this is a pure coincidence, because it's not really a rule. In the same area, I know many other, in addition to Sklarov, I know many other names which are also derived from Ukrainian occupational names, and many names derived from local Ukrainian place names. So it's not for me. It's not very strange with the name, with the fact that the name is really based on Slavic root. The fact that for the person in question, all other grandparents had a Germanic name, for me, it's just a coincidence.
Okay.
This place was not specifically 100% Yiddish names. Where I would say that even more, one half of names from that area were based on Slavic words.
Wonderful. That should be very helpful.
Yeah, okay.
Let's move on. We have another one here. One is a general question, Sasha. He asked, when names were given out or taken, was a registry ever made including who got what name? Is there some kind of list of names in patronymic style with a correlation to the new family name?
Well, unfortunately, I think this does not exist for Russia.
Yeah.
So this kind of document, they exist for different German provinces. For example, I was able to work myself with name adoption list for Prussia, for different provinces of Prussia, so West Prussia, East Prussia, Posen, and generally speaking, I think all provinces from the what is currently Western Poland and Germany. But for Kingdom of Poland and for Russian Pale of Settlement, I don't think any list exists. So, for example, I have no proof about this for Russia, but, for example, for Poland, when I was writing my book about Polish Jewish surnames, I came to Warsaw, and I spent a whole week working with Polish archives, and I was able to find a depository of all documents related to name adoption by Jews in Poland during the 1820s. And so there were many, many documents, but there were no name adoption lists.
Okay.
So documents were just exchanges where the documents that survived and are still kept in Warsaw, they discussed the exchanges, written exchanges between different Polish administration of Warsaw, administration of different Polish provinces, discussing how, what is the portion of Jews who already took surnames, why there are still Jews who are not taken surnames, who are still without names, etc., etc. And I was able just to find perhaps two or three very small lists of names that were assigned by Polish officials about 1825, 1824, but no really adoption list. Perhaps these documents never existed. At any case, they were never kept in archives. And for Russia, I know that many people tried to find something. Many people were already, during the last 20 years, tried to worked extensively with Latvian, Lithuanian, Ukrainian, Belarusian archives, and nobody has ever been able to come across any kind of list of names that were adopted in this or that place. So I think this kind of documents does not exist.
Okay. The next question is two names from Brest-Litovsk area. One is R-A-S-Z-A-P, Razap, and the other is Chara, C-H-A-R-A, or Chari. And
actually, you need to read it in Polish. So the first was Razap, and
Razap.
The second is Chara.
Chara.
So it's a Polish pronunciation, Polish spelling.
Okay. So his question was, is there any evidence regarding the etymology of this name? He does refer to them as being acronyms for, different rabbis.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. The name Razap was, I think it's clearly a what is called monogenetic name. That is, all people who are bearing this name in the world are certainly related, and for all of them, just one ancestor took this name at the beginning of the 19th century. in the Brest Litovsk area. Now, the structure of the name clearly implies that it is an abbreviation, with R staying for rabbi. I found it's not me who invented this with explanation that Rashab means Rabbi Shlomo Pinsker. I think this idea sounds good because the last letter should in any case, Shlomo Pinsker means Shlomo, someone called Shlomo from the town of Pinsk, and the town of Pinsk is very close to Brest-Litovsk. So Shlomo Pinsker means a rabbi who was called Shlomo and whose nickname was Pinsker because he came from Pinsk, and in Yiddish, Pinsker means someone from Pinsk. So with etymology sounds very accurate for me. I don't remember in what kind of source I was able to see this explanation, but it sounds correct for me. Now, who was this man, Shlomo Pinsker? I have no idea, and I was not. I tried to find to look at some Jewish sources from the that would be speaking about rabbis from the beginning of the 19th century, and it, certainly this person is not mentioned in this list. So Shlomo Pinsker was not a famous rabbi, but he was certainly some rabbi from Brest, I think, because if his name was Pinsker, it means that he came from Pinsk, but he was already living in another place. So most plausibly, he was already living in Brest, where some of his descendants, perhaps his son or his grandson, took this name in order to celebrate with his illustrious ancestor. But his combination does not appear in any Jewish book I consult, so I don't know who exactly was Shlomo Pinsker. And another name, Hara, it's also an abbreviation of in modern Hebrew it would be Hatan, Rabbi Yosef, or any name starting with the letter Yod. In Yiddish it was not Hatan, it was Hosen, Rabbi Yosef, Joseph. There is no real evidence about who was this person. But in the same area, a large number of people, of Jews, have chosen names that were abbreviation of son of Rabbi someone, or son of Hatan Hosen means son-in-law. So son-in-law of some rabbi. It was a common pattern used in this area. So I have no doubt that in both cases we have referred to two abbreviations, but I have no knowledge and no information about who exactly were these two persons, Shlomo Pinsker and Yosef, or perhaps Judah, or perhaps whatever name from with would be started with Yo, could be the source of a name like Harry. So this is the case when the etymology is partly known and partly unknown. What are the words that were abbreviated is more or less clear, but about what specific person we are speaking, the only tool that can provide the real answer is genealogical research dealing with information from the area in question, from the beginning of the 19th century when these names were assigned.
Okay. And finally, family from, Parmigiani, in the Austro-Hungarian Empire near Tarnopol. Kalafa. Any information on that particular name?
Okay, so this is in it is a name from Galicia.
Yes.
It is a name from Galicia. In my book, I never mentioned the shtetl names, but I always classified my entries by district name. And just let me look at them about in what district. You said Pomerzhany, yes?
Pomerzhany, yes.
Yes. Pomerzhany was, it was a shtetl, so a small town in Zlochov district of Galicia. And if I look to my book about Galicia, yes, I have a reference exactly from the only reference about Kalafa I have, it is from Zlochov district, so most likely it is really from Pomerzhany. The name, it was very rare name. Again, it is an example of monogenetic name, so every person with this name in the world is certainly descending from the same person who took this name, who to whom it was assigned by other people. In this case of Galicia, it is from the end of the 18th century, of course. So, actually, Kalafa, it is a Polish word that means muzzle, snout. So I would say, I think it kind of nickname, or perhaps it was not in nickname, it's, there is another possibility. Perhaps this name was assigned by official, some Christian official, to local Jew, taking just this, it's not pejorative, but well, it's not very positive feature to call someone muzzle or snout, so
no,
face of a dog. I cannot know. So the name, the origin, the word which is on the basis of its name is clear, I think. But for what reason the person received this name, this is very difficult to know. And I say that for me there are two possibilities. Perhaps it was kind of a local, very expressive nickname. Another possibility.
Like maybe
that
he had
it was
a big nose, maybe.
For a Polish-speaking official who gave this name, just assigned this name for a Jew, just in spite of him.
Yeah, probably maybe he had a big nose, is what I said.
You know,
God, we don't know. It's very interesting how things appear. Let's move on. We have another question from the surname Abramson. This is from Lithuania near Rakiskas, and he assumes the name is Abramovich, but nothing seems to pop up in any of the Lithuanian records under that name. So is there any other name that he should be looking for?
Excuse me, and the person says that the name is Abramovich or Abrahamson?
Well, his name
is the exact name?
Abram's son, but he thought that perhaps because it's Abram's son in English, anglicized, that it may have been Abramovich in Lithuania during in Rakiskas. But up to this time, there seems to be no records.
Okay. Rakiski was a shtetl in a Novoalexandrovsk district of Kovna Gubernia. So now it's called Zarasai. It's a town, not Rokishka, the district center is now called Zarasai. It's a town in Lithuania. If I look to the list of different names, Jewish names, that from that area, actually, I received, when I was preparing the second edition of my book about the Russian Empire, I received many many hundreds of thousands of extracts from civil records or from tax paying lists from special interest groups from Lithuania and Latvia. And so, for example, I received a list of names of different names that were appearing in different districts of Kovna Gubernia. So I'm currently looking in the list of for Novoalexandrovsk district, and indeed the closest names I see are Abramovich and Abramsky. The lists I'm looking, they are not exhaustive. And when I look just about how the name was written in England, it was in England, yes, in London,
yes.
Abrahamson, I would suggest that the genuine spelling in Russia, the most likely spelling in Russia was Abramson or Abramson. So, like in English, so, but without internal H. Just Abramson and Abramson, which were common names in different parts of Russia. I have never seen any Abramson or Abramson in Novoalexandrovsk district, but I have seen it this name in different other districts from the same general area, from Lithuania, from Kovna Gubernia, Vilna Gubernia, etc. So my best guess would be, however, not Abramovich, as the person suggests, but really Abramson, Abramson. But, this is my best guess. If the person says that he tried already to find any and was unable to see, to find out any civil record, perhaps the person in question would spend several dozens of years in Rakishke, and actually the family could be from some neighboring district. So
okay.
Unfortunately, I cannot be of big help, but my best guess is really that the name would be in Russian Abramson or Abramson.
Okay. Now, Sasha, let me ask you a question. I've just gotten permission from the station that we can go over if you like. It's up to you. And I know not too much over, but I know we still have a few that we've received via email that we haven't gotten to yet. So would you be okay with that?
Just now, you mean?
That we can go a little longer if we need to.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we're probably about 4-6. About 6 minutes to the end of the hour. So I can tell we're going to need to go over just a little bit. I would not say we're going to have to call it quits at some point, that's for sure. So would you be willing to go maybe another extra 10 minutes?
Yes, of course, extra 10 minutes. Okay.
Okay, cool. All right, next question. Family lived in Telenești, Bessarabia, now Moldova. Maiden name was Youlis, Youlis. Any idea of the origin of that
mm-hmm.
name?
So Youlis, yes?
Y-O-U.
Okay.
L-I-S.
So the pronunciation in Russian and Yiddish is Youlis.
Youlis.
And I have two ideas about this name. The name was from Bessarabia. The person told that it is from Telenestia. Telenestia is a town that in the Orgeyev district of Bessarabia. So in my book about Russian names, indeed I have this name in southern Ukraine and in Bessarabia. And I have two hypotheses for this. The first one, which was which I entered in my book, is that it is a distortion of local pronunciation of S. The final S is the possessive suffix, so son of, and the preceding part, Yuli, is the local pronunciation of the biblical male name, which is in English, Joel. So in Yiddish it is Joel. Joel in Yiddish. And so Yulis could be a son of Joel. Another possibility about which I'm speaking and thinking now is that the area in question is very close to Galicia. And in Galicia, I looked, I'm just looking to the list of names from Galicia. And in Galicia, there is a name, Julius, which is a German form of a Christian first name, which is in English, Julius. And it looks very close, so just if we add the second to last letter, U, we obtain a name which sounds very close to first name, Christian first name, Julius, or Julius in English. And in Galicia, actually, there was a number, an important number of names that Austrian clerks assigned to Jews just taken not only common words from the German dictionary, vocabulary, but also just taken German given names. For example, Julius is an example of German given names that could be assigned to a local Jew just in an artificial way. Perhaps the Austrian clerk, his first name was Julius. Or perhaps the first name of the Jew in question was close to this, for example, Joel. So this is again an example where there are several possibilities. We cannot say, at any case, I cannot, and I think nobody can really say what is the real one, but I'm almost sure that one of these two was valid, but, well, I don't know which one. Either it is son of Joel, or perhaps it's a distortion of German Christian name, first name Julius, that became a Jewish surname.
Well, those were definitely some interesting clues for that particular researcher to look at, that's for sure. We have another one here, and it is the name Elias from Ubuda, Budapest, circa 1837. They were grain merchants, mm-hmm. and he believes they came from Spain through the Turkish Empire into the Hungarian Empire. And he is curious as to its origination because he has absolutely no Yiddish or Eastern European habits. So it's mainly a Sephardic family.
Mm-hmm. And so what is his reason to think that it is a Sephardic name? Because the person have seen some Sephardic Jews bearing this name in Israel, for example. Okay. Well, I think it's really a coincidence. So, of course, the family could be of whatever origin. It could be Ashkenazic or Sephardic, But the name Elias, well, the pronunciation, the European pronunciation would be Elias in English, Elias.
Okay.
It is just a Christian form of common Jewish first name, and for this reason it was taken in different countries, in Germany, in Galicia, in Austro-Hungary, so in Hungary itself. And some people with the same, which is a Greek form of the biblical Elia, Elia. The name is clearly polygenetic, so many, many persons in many different countries took the same name, and I think that for Hungary, Hungary and Budapest, for example, the capital of Hungary, it was part of the Ottoman Empire for during almost 150 years. But it was during the period when Jews had no surnames yet. So when Austro-Hungarian Jews were to take surnames at the end of the 18th century, I don't think any name that could come from Middle East could be still in use. So I'm pretty sure that the name was really acquired anew at the end of the 18th century by some family in Vienna or in Austro-Hungarian Empire. The name was certainly taken because the first name of the father or the first name of the grandfather or the person who acquired his name was in German, Elias, in German, Elias. I don't see here, just being based on this name, any connection to Spain, to Sephardic names, etc.
Okay. We're going to do two more, and I think we may have to reschedule you for another day. We've got people on the phones. We've got messages that have come in, and we're taking these in the order that they have been received. So we may need to do it again,
mm-hmm.
but I've got two more here, and then I think we're going to have to call it quits. So here we go, Sasha.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy, this one almost sounds Hawaiian. My grandfather's surname was something akin to Hakailo or Hukalo or Hukalo. He came from mm-hmm. somewhere near Kiev. In various records, the place is Homan, Hume, Human, Human. I've been taking this to mean somewhere around Uman, U-M-A-N. Have no evidence to support
okay.
this as yet.
Okay. Well, here there is no mystery at all. I think I'm sure for 100% about what was the name of the person and what was the name of the town, because the town name was really, it's not near Uman, but it was Uman itself, because actually, Uman, which is a big town south of Kiev, in Polish, it does not start with U, it starts with H. So when you said in various records the place was one of the spelling that the person suggested, namely H-U-M-A-N, it is the Polish spelling for the town of Uman, so it's not really around Uman, it's Uman itself. So this is the name of the place. So here I have no doubt at all, it's 100%, I'm 100% sure. Now the name, in Russian there is no equivalent for H. So every H in Russian actually corresponds to J. In Russian you need to look for J. And so in Russian, this name is sounds Gukailo. So J-U-K-A, I-Y, as you want, L-O. So this is a name which is, it means some a shouter, someone who shouts in Ukrainian. And for example, just to illustrate how the algorithm of Bader Morse phonetic matching works, you can just take any of the spelling you suggested, just put it in the searchable reference book website I indicated you, and you would obtain that the spelling in my book about Russia is Gukailo with first letter S J, not H, because in Russian there is no H. So
okay.
Here there is no mystery at all. Everything is clear.
Okay.
Someone who make loud sounds, a shouter.
All right.
And moreover, I'm looking to my book. Gukailo is really from Uman.
Uman. So he is correct in that assumption. All right, we've got one more. And, Sasha, we have two people on the phone lines that I've had to tell we can't take them. So we're going to need to do this again sometime soon. That's for sure. So here's the final one. I am descended from a Polish family from, oh, my gosh, I can't pronounce this, D-Z-I-A-L-O-S-Z-Y-C-E.
Jaloszice.
Okay. And
the Polish pronunciation is Jaloszice.
Jaloszice. And the name that he's looking at is K-A-T-O-L-I-K, Catholic.
Catholic, okay.
Yes. Now, he says... Go ahead.
So, this word means just Catholic in Polish. And so, of course, I understand why the person is... so, here, from what word it is derived... there is no doubt. The word itself is Catholic, that means in Polish, Catholic. Now, why a Jew could receive a name that means Catholic? I think it is kind of nickname. There is no possibility that the person is descending from some Polish person who was really Catholic and who became a Jew just because at that time, there was no legal possibility to become Jew, to change religion from Catholic religion to Jewish religion. So on the opposite sense, of course, it was possible. Any Jew could at any moment become a Catholic. But in other sense, in other direction, no Catholic could become a Jew, because otherwise it was totally illegal if it was discovered that person would be put to fire, really. Until the end of the 18th century, there were some processes when people who became Jews illegally, they were put to fire when this situation was found. So for this reason, I'm 100% sure that the family in question was not descended from a real Catholic. So now the question is, for what reason a Jewish person who could receive a nickname Catholic that became Catholic, so that became his last name, it's difficult to say, but perhaps he was living, I don't know, many reasons can be valid. For example, he could be living near a Christian church, he was making some movement when he was praying, that made some other people to think that he was behaving himself like a Catholic. So in any case, it's a very difficult psychological problem for what reason people received this or that nickname. But for me, what is clear, what is really kind of nickname that became a last name, but there is no real relation to any conversion from Catholic religion to Jewish one.
Very interesting. Sasha, thank you so much for being here. I want to remind everybody that his books are available at www.avutenu.com. That's, oh boy, I don't even want to try that either. We're getting ready to get to the end of the show. I know it, but I should. It's not coming to me, but I think I can find it. It's AVOYTANU. Is that correct, Sasha? Avutanu.
Yeah.
That's it. www.avutanu.com. In any event, I can tell by the calls and the amount of messages that we had received that this was a very popular guest, and I want to thank Sasha for taking the time. It's getting late there. I know he's very tired. He's spent a good hour and 15 minutes speaking, and that gets very difficult. So I am going to ask you to come back, and we're going to do this again, I hope. And want to wish everybody a good week. This is Susan King. You've been listening to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. We have an interesting guest coming in next week. It happens to be my birthday. Speaking of synchronicities, I'm having Michelle Caron, who is probably one of the most renowned astrologers. We had Allison Bowman on, or Bachman on, like, a couple weeks ago during numerology, and we actually took some test cases. So it's a very interesting way to learn a little bit about your ancestors, a little different, I might add. Again, you can find me at www.susaneking.com, and this has been Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect.